Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terrell Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. All right. Well, I'm your host, Terrell Davenport. You are now rocking with TD. This is the Talking with TD Titans show, podcast, review, everything you want to call it. And man, oh man, what a game. So we're going to break down the thrashing that the Titans fell to at the hands of the Cardinals. And we'll get into that. We got Run TMC coming. Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver. We'll definitely have our breakdown there and spin it forward to the Seahawks game. And speaking of the Seahawks, we have my ESPN NFL Nation teammate, yes, Brady Henderson, covering the Seattle Seahawks. He'll come on and we'll talk a little shop there. So load a show here, and I guess we might as well kick it off, right? Talking about this thrashing that the Titans got at the hands of the Arizona Cardinals. And there's a few things that stood out to me, and I think really what we need to get into, what we could start with, is just like right from the jump. And Elijah, we looked at it a little bit, you know, play by play, the first couple series, and just how these guys were able to just set the tone, literally punch these guys in the face right from the start. And it started with Chandler Jones, and he showed those hands to LaJuan and was able to, you know, catch LaJuan in a situation where he lunged and he swiped him down and he tackled Henry in the backfield. And that was kind of like a tone setter.
Oh, it sent a message for the rest of the game, because we watched plays later in the game, deep in the second half, and the Cardinals already had a lead, and the same stuff was happening.
Yeah,
I mean, it set a tone to what literally happened every possession of the game. There was never a clean pocket. There was never any clean running lanes. The Cardinals' defense dominated the Titans' offensive line to the point of embarrassment, and to the point where that alone, like that single battle alone in the trenches, took the Titans out of the game, in my opinion. Because there's some plays like, okay, the Kyler Murray play where he runs 30 yards all over the field behind the line of scrimmage and still finds Rondale Moore for a first down. Like, Kyler Murray's going to do that to a lot of teams this year. Like, the Titans won't be the only team that happens to. But what happened between the trenches really made plays like that a lot worse, because you're never able to get yourself back into the game.
Yeah, and when it comes to getting punched in the face right away, this is what I'm talking about. So you look at the first four series that they have, right? -3 yards, Derrick Henry tackled. I talked about that. You got -1 yard, Derrick Henry tackled. And even with that one, everyone says, oh, hey, man, well, you know, you got these guys up front. You need to double them. Well, guess what they did? They doubled. They have Quisenberry and Jeff Swaim, and it was back-to-back swim moves, and J.J. Watt is in the backfield, and he tackled Derrick Henry for a loss of one. And then you keep going. You got Derrick Henry left end, 2 yards. You got Ryan Tannehill sacked for -6. And really, at that point, the beatdown just was kind of on from there. And I think looking at the rushing attack first, what they were able to do was really stack the gaps. And you had the guys up front win. They were whooping tail, all of them. Michael Dogby, you know, all of them. Phillips, like Marcus Golden, you name it. If their hand was on the line or you know, near the line in the front, they were winning. And these are the type of things that you can't have up front. And everybody points to, you know, they wrongly say, oh, well, the right tackle situation is a mess. Well, no, it's not just that.
It was everywhere.
It was coming from everywhere. Even Roger Saffold, there was a time where he got beat. Chandler Jones, he and I think it was Dogby, they ran like a TE stunt. And Jones, he rammed into Saffold, and so like he stepped towards LaJuan and then rammed into Saffold, and Dogby, the D tackle, swooped to the outside, and then Jones, after whamming into Saffold, was able to beat Saffold and get to the quarterback, and that was a sack. So it just was a really dominating type of thing. And I do like that, because right after the game, you know, at that point I didn't get to rewatch it, so I wasn't thinking of what happened on that play. But then after the game, I do like the fact that when we got to speak to Roger Saffold, he said that they were beating us with stunts and twists. Mm-hmm. I like that he said that, right? Because that's what this play in particular, one of Chandler Jones' career high, 5 sacks, it came on that play. So, you know, it's not just Taylor Lewan, mm-hmm. right? It's not just the right tackle. This is a unit they needed to struggle. And then there was one play where Buda Baker came off the edge and he was able to knock Lewan down. And everybody's like, oh, well, Lewan is soft. He, listen, it's not that he's soft. In this case, he was caught out of position. And one of the things that you got to remember is when you have these bigger guys going against little guys. Now, I'm not excusing the play because it was a terrible play regardless.
So it shouldn't have happened.
He got beat. It shouldn't have happened. But I'm just looking into why it did. And what ended up happening was Buda Baker came off the edge knowing that Buda Baker is a faster guy than him. Lewan tried to rush into his drop, right, to keep him from being able to run around him and get to the quarterback. Well, Buda Baker is a pretty smart player. So he knew that that was going to be the case. So then he showed the outside rush, switched it up, went inside. Lewan got caught out of position. His legs were separate. He was kind of like the Jordan logo. You know, when you get caught and your legs are like the Jumpman logo, I don't care who you are, you're going to get pushed over. So that's why that happened. It's not because Lewan was soft or anything like that. He overcompensated for what he thought was going to be an outside rush.
Got outboxed.
Right. And that, I mean, those things happen. It can't happen often. You know, Lewan can't get beat as often as he did. And I'm not just talking about sacks. We talked about the opening play where he was beat on a run play. So I think that alone, like, that starts with it. It was just a poor outing. And then, you know, you have the Julio Jones situation. That is something that I get. You want to call it out, right? You can't have that because it would have been 3-1, and that's an early series, and who knows how things could have turned around. I mean, that was an opportunity where they were finally gaining yards. They were finally advancing the football. But that made it 3rd and 15, and or 16 rather, and, you know, ended up being another punt. I do think it's something that typically happens after play. I mean, you're going to have that hand-to-hand contact after plays. Byron Murphy and Julio Jones were guilty of it. Julio Jones got caught. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was kind of being blown out of proportion. And that's why, you know, I wanted to ask Coach Vrabel about that. I want to get Chris Sanders. I want to get what he has to say about that, you know, how he would have responded. We'll talk to him about that in the next segment. But just keeping it on this game, you know, offensively, there are multiple things to be frustrated about, right? You know, you got these guys on the interior, right? They're just getting, as we mentioned, they're getting their tails whooped.
Without having to load the box.
You start loading the box for them by using 13 mm-hmm. personnel. Listen, man, when you got guys up front getting that butt spanked, spread the field, man, attack the perimeter. You know, and that's something that I'm curious why that wasn't done, just as far as just bunch formation, right? Create that quick separation. You saw some of those things. The Raiders, actually, if you watch the Monday night game, the Raiders did that a few times with Renfro and Waller, and I believe it wasn't Edwards. It was one of the other receivers. But they found ways just to create quick separation. Waller was the point man, nice, big, gigantic guy.
Very tough to jam.
So he gets off the ball, and then you got Renfro just releasing underneath him and setting up. And it made it easy, you know, running those different routes. Catch and throw. That's really what it boiled down to. So these are the type of things I think the Titans probably should have done. Get the ball to A.J. Brown. Get the ball to Julio Jones. Chester Rogers. You know, these guys, get it to them quickly and let them make some plays with the ball in their hands. Because, yeah, you aren't able to take those downfield shots. And granted, this is a team that loves to be able to do that. It wasn't there. You just didn't have the time. Unless, you know, and that's another thing that just kind of hit me. Well, I won't get into that because I'm not exactly sure that would have worked either. I was looking at some of the slot fades and those type of things, but you just didn't have the time to do it. So that being said, just getting back to working the offense, you know, there were a few times where they did hit A.J. Brown on some quick throws and ended up, you know, he had the touchdown, very nice catch, high pointing it and catching in the end zone. But the bottom line is this. I think regardless of what the Titans say, regardless of what, you know, A.J. Brown said about them actually getting a lot of work in together, regardless of Ryan Tannehill or Julio Jones saying, hey, we'll be fine, regardless of Todd Downing or Pat O'Hara saying, hey, I'm confident that it was not there. You had the throw that was intercepted. That's a good example of something that we talked about and last week, where is it trusting that your quarterback won't put you in harm's way. Okay, when you're running a slant as a receiver, that thing has to be top of the numbers to mid-face mask. I don't want to be reaching up and having to make that catch. Now, granted, it hit his hands, and we're talking about Julio Jones especially, he should have caught it. But this is one of the things that develops from chemistry, from working together. Top of the numbers, mid-face mask. That's where that slant has to be, because I want my quarterback to put it there so that way I could snap it out of the air. I'm across the middle. Sharks are across the middle. I want to be able to catch that thing, tuck it, absorb contact. I don't want you hanging me up high so that, you know, my core is exposed and I can get rocked. Hospital ball. So those are the things that, you know, that was one of the throws. And then the other one where it was an outbreaking route to the sideline, he was open, but it was just overshot just a little bit, and they couldn't connect. These are two examples of how they need to get better on the same page. It's going to come with time. I'm not on here, you know, unlike some people, to say, hey, you know what, the skies are falling. Armageddon is coming. You know, the four horsemen, they're coming out the sky. You know what I mean? That's not the case. Was that loss bad? Absolutely. It was disgusting. I tweeted, this is disgusting offensive football. I don't know how long I've been talking, but I've only focused on the offense so far because it was that bad. So there's a lot to be fixed. People say, okay, well, why weren't you running play action? Here's why they weren't running play action, because you didn't have the time.
It requires now, some time to be able to fake a handoff.
And yeah. also, play action. You run that, you get max protection. That's good. Typically, that will work when your guys, you know, are struggling a bit up front. But they were doing more than struggling. There was no time to do that. And then on top of that, you got to look, what were those first four series that I mentioned? It was what, -3, -1, a 2-yard gain, and -6.
I think they're -16 yards total for those first four drives.
Guess what happens when you're minus on first down? On second down, you're in what?
Oh, in second down, you are behind the 8-ball.
Exactly. You're in second and long. One of the times they were in second and long, I think it was that second series, in fact, after J.J. Watt had to tackle for a loss. It was the second series. It was second and 12. They went play action, and Chandler Jones was exposed. And hindsight is always 20/20. I you know, it's always 20/20. So a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, how do you not account for him on the outside as Chandler Jones? Well, I get what you're saying, but you also have expectations, right? You want the quarterback to be able to boot and not have that guy there. And Ryan Tannehill actually said it on Wednesday. He said, you know, well, what happened was no one was expecting Chandler Jones to come right after the quarterback. But then you have the opposite side of, well, this guy's a premier pass rusher. He gets paid to rush the passer. Of course he's going to come after the quarterback. I tend to agree with both situations, however, in this situation, it's second and 12. You can't expect a premier pass rusher
to play a run
to play the run on second and 12. And that's why down and distance is so important. And I do like the fact that Mike Vrabel brings that up frequently when you talk about, or when he's asked about this team being more effective on third downs offensively. Well, you get behind the chains, it's going to mess a lot of things up. So offensively, yeah, there's a lot that has to be fixed. They should be able to fix it. But next week, Seattle's no slouch. You know what I mean? They're no slouch. So that's going to be interesting how they work that. Defensively, I thought, you know, there was a bright spot. There was a bright spot, and that was Christian Fulton. And this is a guy that, you know, we've talked about on this show. And he played left and right corner. Mike Vrabel, unsolicited, he brought up Christian Fulton and said that, you know, he liked what he saw from there. Here's what Coach Vrabel had to say about Fulton.
You mentioned it being easy for them on some occasions. does that apply to the defensive backs and just, you know, not challenging as much as you wanted to? So I know that was an area of focus.
Well, I mean, it was everything. I mean, there was times where we didn't challenge. I mean, I thought we challenged, and, you know, I thought Christian Fulton, you know, was encouraging. I mean, Christian challenged. He did his job. I'm excited to watch Christian Fulton play football this year, you know, which I was really glad that the official picked up the flag because, you know, him and I were both kind of in the back, and I didn't think he made any contact. And so the guy came in correctly, you know, told him that there wasn't any contact and it wasn't defensive pass interference. And I thought Christian, you know, played well. We just, you know, we all have to play well and continue to improve.
And that play that he's talking about, it was a really good play where he managed to, you know, avoid hooking the corner with his outside hand, and he swooped in and knocked it out. He had a very good game. He had a pass breakup against A.J. Green in the end zone, too. That was definitely a really good play. So that was a bright spot. But then you had, you know, Kevin Byard struggling in coverage. Well, not struggling. I mean, Christian Kirk just made a really good play. You had Elijah Molden did get beat by Christian Kirk. Hopkins doing what Hopkins does. These guys have to challenge more. And when I say challenge more, I'm pointing specifically to the one check that they made where you know Jayon Brown is blitzing. Why not have the safety come up a little bit more to pick up where that receiver's going, which is to replace where Jayon Brown went to blitz, and Hopkins caught it. He slammed on the brakes, reversed out. It was a touchdown. And these are the type of plays that, you know, make you kind of scratch your head, because that is exactly what we've heard over and over again that they would commit not to doing, playing off coverage. You can't zero blitz like that. Not even zero blitz, but you can't have so many guys blitzing like that, because it wasn't a zero blitz. But you can't do that and expect these guys to play off coverage and not get beat. That has to get better. So we'll see what happens there. 53% on third downs. That's definitely not a good thing. It actually got worse from the cumulative number.
Yeah,
from last year. So they have to get that better. Kyler Murray, though, you know, you had some say that he's not a good quarterback. I think he showed that. Some of the plays that he made. You mentioned the 3rd and 10 one. And just multiple things, man. Staring in the face of pressure coming and delivering the ball, right? You know, the one we just talked about, the touchdown to Hopkins. The 2 touchdowns to Christian Kirk. Scrambling and being able to get on the move and make a throw off schedule on the run to hit Hopkins, who did an amazing job of getting his feet down. These are all things that, you know, I don't want to say you can't help, but this is the opposing players doing what they do. At the same time, your guys have to do what they do. Bring the quarterback down. There were too many times where he was able to just squirt free and do things, right? You got the boot, the touchdown that he ran. Why was nobody staying home on the backside? These are all things that they have to get ironed out, because it's going to be more of the same this week against the Seahawks with Russell Wilson. So those are the things that I wanted to get off of my chest. This is going to be a great opportunity for them on Sunday to rebound. We'll see what happens. We're going to get into that game against the Seattle Seahawks next with Chris Sanders. But first, we're going to pay these bills. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Guitars, please. Yeah, you hear the music? You know what time it is, Run TMC. We got to bring Chris Sanders in, but you know how we do. We got to introduce him. I'm trying to think what player I'm going to introduce him as. I don't know. I'll see a team and a player will pop into my mind. So let's go ahead and quiet the music and dim the lights. And now, for your New Jersey Nets at power forward, number 44, Rick my horn.
Why, you silly man. And now, stand in the Jackson 5.
Oh, boy, it was Tito last week.
We have Tito Jackson.
Slow down, Tito, damn. What's going on, man?
How you doing, man? I know it's been a crazy week with football, man. What's going on with these Titans, man? What do you think?
Oof. Yeah, that's the only thing you could say, man. Oof. That's all you could say. But, hey, the good thing is they have another week
Absolutely.
To come back and reinforce some of the work that they got in. But I think when you look at this game, we'll touch on it briefly because there's a few touch points that I want to hit on. But when you look at the game and then you hear, you know, some of these guys say, hey, you know, we got punched in the mouth and we didn't respond correctly. Like, how do you digest what happened and those comments combined together?
But you know what's disappointing, and I'm being careful when I say this, but we're just coming off COVID where you can have fans. The fans are ready to explode. I mean, everything is in your hands. You come out and lay an egg. That's tough.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff we were talking about, you know, Julio Jones, Henry's going to have a great year, all these great things we were talking about, Luan coming back, all these things that we were talking about, then all of a sudden you get punched in the mouth and it doesn't look like the same thing that they were saying. I just think that was a problem. And we got to understand something. I want to really, really be careful with this. It's the first game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be careful because, you know, just like when I coach football at Montgomery Bird Academy, sometimes you got to get the kinks out because you don't really realize the speed of the game. And then also, I want to kind of touch on, you know, I know people make fun of it with the Allen Iverson thing. Practice. We're talking about practice. Now you understand why practice and getting a whole bunch of reps are very important.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something. It's funny because I don't know if you watched the broadcast with Eli Manning and Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning, so on the Monday night game, they just basically kind of like sat in the living room and talked shop while the game was playing. It was pretty cool. But one of the things, I forget what it was that had happened, but because I was switching back and forth between, because I got to see my guy Lewis Riddick too, you know what I mean? Right. So I was switching back and forth between the two, and I switched back, and Peyton was kind of going on a rant about the importance of practice.
Absolutely.
And how some of the things that you work out in practice transfer to the game. And I was like, wow, this is very interesting that he's saying it, and it's very applicable to what these Titans, especially the offense, is going through. But what's so interesting to me is the defense did practice together for the most part, and they did play a lot together in the preseason, and they gave up 38 points. Now, obviously, complimentary football went into that as well. You know, the offense just not doing anything, but still, I thought that was really interesting.
You know, even just looking at with Luan, and the reason why I'm talking about Luan, I'm not picking on him or saying nothing negative about him. I'm talking about, you know, when you miss a lot of time when coming off an injury, and then you come in a camp and you miss more practice, you're not getting the speed of the game. And that's why everybody's like, oh, Luan is terrible. Luan is not terrible.
Right.
He's just not getting up to speed yet. I mean, look at the situation a couple of years ago when they had Conklin. Conklin's a beast. Conklin's a dog. But when he came back off the injury, everybody's like, oh, he's terrible. He just had to understand the speed of the game, how to get his feet wet, all these things, and how to use his hands again, because you got a guy coming off the edge like Chandler. Are you kidding me? The first game, and you're just coming off injury? You haven't had that much practice? I don't care who you are going to struggle.
Yeah, and Chandler Jones, let's be clear, that's nothing to be playing with. That guy, he's official. And, you know, you saw the results of it. So I get it. That was just, I mean, that was disgusting football. But I don't think it's time to feel like Armageddon is coming. And that's not me trying to find a positive spin or anything like that. It's the first game. I think there's still, I mean, you got plenty more. You got 16 more. So that being said, spinning it forward. Actually, you know what? No. Before we go to Seattle and look at some matchups, let's get this out of the way. The Julio Jones comments, right, that Mike Vrabel had on Julio Jones. You know, don't do dumb expletive to hurt the team. this is something that national media took and they ran with, and I get it. It's a very, I mean, yeah, it's something, you know, on the surface. Yeah. Wow, he really, like, he scolded one of the premier players, a new one at that. These words are words that he's actually used before in other situations. So I think we need to make that clear. But at the same time, you know, you're in the locker room. How would you take that, you know, and how do you think Julio Jones took it?
I mean, it all depends on what are you hearing or are you listening? You know what I'm saying? And I know that kind of sounds cliche, because I'm going to give you an illustration. Just imagine, I played for the Tennessee Titans and I played for the Houston Oilers. And there was a point in time where, you know, I think it was my second year that the receivers were struggling for, like, just one or two games. So in the media, you know, the first thing that Jeff Fisher said is, oh, the receivers can't get off the press. Mm. Okay, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I just scored two touchdowns last week, and now you're saying the way can't get off the press? So it depends on how I'm interpreting it. Now, the same thing with Julio Jones. If that's the phrase that Mike Vrabel says to everybody, then he should accept it. Okay, I can't make a stupid penalty like that because it messes up the team. But if you're going to get into your feelings and you're going to get emotional and say, oh, he's just singling me out, that's where the problem's going to lie. And if that stuff doesn't get nipped in the bud, and he goes and say, if Julio Jones catches one ball and drop three, and Mike Vrabel says something else, you don't want this thing to grow legs, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that's the key, is stopping that snowball from accumulating. So that being said, I asked Mike Vrabel, hey, look, what really was it that you were trying to do? You know, were you sending a message, or was that just simply a reply to the question? Here's what he had to say on that.
A lot was made about your comments, your response when asked about Julio Jones' penalty. I know you've used that phrase before, but was that sending a message, or was
I don't think I've ever said anything in front of you guys or these cameras or this microphone that I haven't said to the players. I mean, I hope not. Like, that's never my intent. They've heard it, from me well before I've come out here. So, and that just happened to be that specific play. And it could be somebody else the next time. I mean, we're just trying to coach, you know, the actions and not the result. Sometimes that doesn't get flagged, right? But the next time it will. Or, you know, maybe there's a holding or a block in the back that doesn't get called. Well, we're still going to coach it. We're going to coach it whether it gets called or not. So we're trying to focus on the actions and maybe not the results.
So you heard him say nothing that he says to the media, like on a microphone or anything like that, hasn't been already said to the team. Mm-hmm. So that being said, I would imagine that this is a conversation that he had with Julio Jones, either privately or the team as a unit, with this an example of how not to do dumb stuff before. And I also like how you say you're coaching the action and what the result can be. Because, look, man, you know how it goes, man. Like, sometimes there is definitely some extra stuff that goes on after the snap, and it just, they let it go. They just let it ride. In this case, they wanted to call it. I mean, there was back and forth. I think, really, they both were guilty, he and Byron Murphy, but Julio Jones got caught.
Yeah, I just think that definitely, and I'm not trying to get off subject a little bit, but if they win next week, we'll never talk about this.
Yeah, well,
we're not going to talk about it.
We probably won't, but there are some who are just bent on the fact that Julio Jones is not a fit and that he's this and he's that, that will, but yeah, we'll leave that one alone. Let's spin it forward to this week. So we're looking at this Titans team going against the Seattle Seahawks. Let's look at the defense first. And, what are some matchups you think that could be a huge issue?
Dude, you already know it's the secondary. They got what's that big dog that got the Godzilla? What's his name?
Yeah, DK Metcalf, yeah.
Dude, last week he had four catches, 60 yards for one TD. Then all of a sudden you got a smaller guy who's Lockett, who's so smooth and fine, dog, two TDs. So I think the matchup is going to be against our defensive backs and their receivers. Because if you look at last week, we struggled with covering the wide receivers, you know, with Hopkins and Kirk and all those guys. So you're getting overall, you're getting to a receiving core with the Seattle Seahawks that's even better. So I'm looking for the matchups. I'm looking at how they're going to stop DK Metcalf. Are they going to play sides, kind of what you talked about last week, or are they going to double coverage or play brackets? What are they going to do? So now if you do that, who's going to be on my man Lockett? Is it going to be Molden? Hooker's out? I don't know. So we got to figure out what the Tennessee is going to do. But I love the matchup, but we definitely got to challenge those wide receivers.
Yeah, Lockett especially. Everybody talks about DK Metcalf, and I get it. That dude is awesome.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? But Lockett, it just amazes me how quickly some folks want to funnel him into being just a gadget guy. That catch that he had over the shoulder, Willie Mays style,
yeah.
Hey, folks don't understand. Like, that's not easy, man. That's not easy at all. So that was a really good catch. And then let me ask you this, though, right? Russell Wilson. You remember Tecmo Bowl? Remember that game? And hey, you remember how you could scramble 30 yards?
I had Atari.
Oh, man, you're going way back. Remember how you could scramble back 30 yards and then throw it 50-plus down the field? That's what Russell Wilson brings to the table.
Oh, but even further, TD, is he always has his eyes up the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he's scrambling, and next you know, he's seeing a wide receiver at the corner of the end zone. He's on the other side, and it's a dime.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, he may not be as fast as Kyler Murray. He might be as fast as Lamar, but he's productive as those guys in the same position.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. So I think, obviously, that tandem, right, with Russell Wilson distributing the ball to them, that's going to be dangerous. But then also, even like for Whiteboard Wednesday, that's why I drew up how you could use Metcalf and the trickery that they do to get Lockett the ball and open it up for someone else. So that's a whole nother twist that they have. And then they can run the football pretty well with Carson. I think they do a good job of making you have to literally worry about everything on offense. But when you flip it to the other side, so let's look at the Titans offense against that defense. I'll kick it off. For me, it's Jamal Adams, man. And what he's able to do coming off the edge. And that dude just, they use him everywhere. But I don't know that I've seen a safety as effective coming off the edge.
Yeah, but, man, he's so physical, and he's a smart player.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not comparing him to Reed for the Baltimore Ravens, but he's got that savviness and that knack of, okay, I know the combination, Russ. I know what they're doing, and I'm going to put myself in position. Man, he's just a smooth operator. What's that song by Sade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, the matchup that I'm looking at, man, and I want to get grimy and dirty, man. I want the O-line against the D-line.
Yeah.
Juan, Saffo, Davis going against Green, Ford, Dunlap, and Bobby Wagner. Yeah, I know he's playing a linebacker, but still, that's going to be a physical matchup. You don't think they're licking their chops about what happened with the Tennessee Titans giving up, what, 4 sacks?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
six
four,
sacks.
Six sacks. You don't think those guys are licking their chops?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So do you see them kind of stacking those gaps and you know, attacking that way? Because, I mean, that's pretty much – I think, you know, when you have guys like Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons who sideline to sideline move really well, you could really, you know, attack different gaps very, very well. Wagner brings the same thing.
Absolutely.
So what do you expect, like, from that front going against this Titans front?
I think I think the blueprint was made last week on how to stop Henry. You know, you fill the gap and make him go side to side, because if you look at last week, what was the first play of the game? He was gonna try to hit the A or B gap, but they made a run sideways and you hit him sideways.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I think they're gonna have a run side to side and fill those gaps and make him try to beat you on the outside.
And in him running sideways, you had an annihilation. I had to stutter it out because it was so bad.
Yeah.
You had an annihilation on that first play, and Henry was tackled for a loss. And that set the tone. That was the initial punch in the face. But the thing that could be a positive for the Titans this week is, hey, you know what? Chandler Jones is not on the other side of the ball this week. J.J. Watt is not on the other side of the ball this week. But Daryl Taylor, the former Tennessee volunteer, he's definitely someone to watch. He had a really good game. I think when you look at Puna Ford, you're talking about a whole bunch of power up front.
Absolutely.
Dunlap, you got length and power. So it's going to still be a tough matchup for them up front. I just don't know that it will be as much of a challenge as Watt, Jones, and Marcus Golden.
But you know what the difference is, man, and this may not be X and O's, but this may be why a lot of times the Tennessee Titans are always in a dogfight now. Because if you look at 3 or 4 years ago, they were hunting. Now, a lot of times when the Tennessee Titans are playing, they're being hunted. That's totally different. It's a totally different mindset. So I think for the Tennessee Titans, you can't come out slow. You can't have a lot of three and outs. You can't have a three and out, a punt, and a fumble. You can't do that against a great team. So they're going to have to come out and start fast, be physical, don't give up the explosive play. And I think the Tennessee Titans are going to win because this is what Mike Vrabel, J-Rob, these are what these guys strive on. They're built for adversity. They're built for saying, you know what, you said I can't do anything. They're built for when people talk about them that they can say, you know what, regardless of what you say, I'm going to get my team right and they're going to win. So they're in that prime position. They're in the same position, and I think that they're going to go down there and beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, Jeffrey Simmons said that he knows that no one but them. How can I word this?
Them.
He knows that they're the only one. No one else besides themselves. There we go. Get my English right. No one else besides themselves believes that they can win this game.
Right.
So that is a good. Yeah, and it is. It does seem like that's how. It's almost like, you know, the more muddy the situation gets, the better they rise to the occasion. Yep. But I want to go back to that part about actually being the ones that are getting hunted as opposed to the hunters. Elaborate on that, because a lot of people don't necessarily understand what it is that you're getting at.
It's like this. When you're at the top of the echelon, everybody wants to beat you. I don't care if you play a team that's 1-14 and you're 14-1. They're going to give you their best. They're going to fight. And they're going to call because they want to beat you. They want to annihilate. They want to get you because they're saying, okay, if you I know you're the best. I know you're number one, but I'm going to show you what we're made of. It's a perfect example. When the Tennessee Titans went to go scrimmage the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the practice were intense.
Yep.
There were fights. They were like, okay, I understand you're number one. I understand all these things, but let me show you that I'm better than you, that I can compete with you, that I can do all the things to compete with you and even be better than you. That's what I mean. Because back in the day when nobody cared about the Tennessee Titans, the Tennessee Titans, they're terrible, this and that. So now teams just played and it was mediocre. But now when you're being hunted, you got a fight on your head every single week.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to. And that's what the Titans, they, you know, had made their trademark of, hey, you know what? This is what we bring to the table each week. That's what they said to them, you know, to the league. Physicality, backyard fight. And these were the things that, you know, hey, you might beat the Titans, but they're going to give you a very strong battle. Now, I thought Chester Rogers, I asked him about, you know, the whole concept of getting punched in the mouth and not responding.
Right.
And he was like, man, I look at it one, like, it's like an actual physical fight, you know, and there's one or two ways you respond. You punch, you cower and you know, continue to get punched, or you punch back and you take over. And I think that's really what they're going to show is inside of them on Sunday against the Seahawks. One other thing real quick, the tempo on offense, I asked Tannehill about that, and I mean, I personally think that they need to come out right off the bat with tempo because they start so slow.
Absolutely.
You know, tempo creates a sense of urgency. I asked Tannehill about just the whole idea of, you know, when you're going tempo, you got to communicate. But when you're in Seattle and you got those 12s, it makes it a lot more difficult, but he said it's not an issue. So we'll see how that whole part of it relays. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on tempo and offense? Because, you know, a lot of these guys kept saying that they came out flat.
I mean, it gives you rhythm. I mean, if you look at last week, there was no rhythm. And I'm not trying to bring up an old name, but Mariota. Mariota would struggle when the tempo was slow, but when the tempo was fast, that's when he flourished. That's when he said, I'm in my comfort zone. So if the Tennessee Titans can have a good tempo, get the defense guessing and putting the defense in bad position and, you know, trying to switch in and out or been in the wrong coverage, then now it gets you in position to win the ball game. And that's what tempo is.
Yeah.
It's just getting the defense off balance.
That's it.
If the Tennessee Titans can get some rhythm, get them off balance, let's go get this victory, Doc.
Yep, you get them in a package that you like, and you take advantage. That's it.
Absolutely.
All right, so predictions. You're predicting a victory here.
I'm gonna do the Florida Reese because I miss my man. I'm gonna say Seattle Seahawks 40, Tennessee Titans 39. No, I'm sorry, Tennessee Titans 40 and the Seahawks 39.
Mm, Well, hey, a winner is a winner is a win.
A winner is a win.
Well, I appreciate you, man. We will reconvene. And next week, let's see if we're talking about a W.
Let's go, big dog.
This is Elijah Molden. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. Let that Jimmy play out a little bit. You got Seattle music. You got a Seattle area athlete and Elijah Molden on the intro. And we're going to bring in one of Seattle's best journalists. That's right. My teammate, ESPN NFL Nation Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. Brady, what's going on, man?
Teron, how's it going? You know what? When I heard the intro to Voodoo Child, I figured that's probably not by accident. They're playing a Seattle musician when they get the Seattle guy on the show. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, for sure, man. Any chance I could get to play a little Jimmy, I'm going to jump on it anyway. So it's just a double bonus here. Man, I guess where can we start? My guy, Tyler Lockett, he's one of my favorite receivers in the league. I love watching him play. So I guess we'll start there. And just his ability to make these plays. Man, that over-the-shoulder catch, Willie Mays style, that was an awesome catch. But for you, you know, seeing him come out to this two-touchdown performance, 100 yards receiving on so few receptions, you know, is that something that you saw coming? Or was that a surprise to you?
Yeah, I mean, he's just a big play waiting to happen, him and DK are. And, you know, that long touchdown, that 69-yard touchdown, that's just something that we've seen countless times. You know, Tyler Lockett getting behind the defense. I'm sure you watched the film and you saw that nifty move that he put on the safety.
Yes.
To kind of get him to open up his hips, and then just blew right by him with that speed. And then the other one, that's just kind of shows you everything that he could do. He's a speed guy, but he's also really crafty. And that, you know, that over-the-shoulder Willie Mays style, I think Willie Mays, that's a perfect comparison to it. That's exactly what it was like. And, you know, that's not a speed play. That's just a crafty guy who has a real knack for tracking the ball in the air and really good body control. And it's also a product of the chemistry that he's built with Russell Wilson over the years. And so he's a receiver that can do it all. And, you know, they paid him a lot of money this offseason on a third contract, a lot of guaranteed money for a 28-year-old. And I think it's those types of skills, that just kind of feel for the game that they feel like he's going to have, even if, you know, he loses a step past his 30th birthday.
You mentioned that chemistry with Russell Wilson, and in my opinion, that's as good as it is in the NFL, right? And there's so many times where, like, you'll see Russell Wilson, he's scrambling, and, you know, he just throws the ball, and you're like, where the heck is the ball going? And next thing you know, you see 16 running underneath it and catching it. From your perspective, like, you're there, you watch it. How did they develop that chemistry? I mean, are these things that they've worked on together? How does that come about?
You know what? It's a great question, because they have, as far as I know, they have never worked out together in the offseason. And Wilson actually, every offseason, he hosts this basically training and throwing sessions with his skill players. He's been doing it basically, I think, since his second year, and more recently down at his offseason home in San Diego. DK Metcalf is there. Other receivers are there. Their tight ends are there. Even some running backs. But Lockett has never done that. And yet, despite that, it's these guys are just on the same page all the time. And, you know, Lockett really has this ability to make these just improbable catches. And really the numbers back that up. I don't have them right in front of me, but he is among the league leaders in catching balls that, you know, next-gen stats would define as having a low completion probability because of factors like separation and things like that with you know, and how tightly the defensive back is covering him and where they are in relation to the sideline, all that. So it's what your eyes tell you, that he's really good at making those improbable catches, and it's what the numbers show as well.
Yeah, and just to spit a number out, now this is from a couple years ago, but Russell Wilson's completion percentage when going to Tyler Lockett was in the 70s, and that was as high, I think it was like top three or something like that. So that lets you know right there that connection. But then you mix in DK Metcalf, and you're seeing this guy just go from someone who was just a straight line route runner to actually – a guy that could literally run routes. How has his progression gone, you know, from your perspective, seeing him out there working with it? What has been behind that?
Yeah, and that's a good point on Metcalf. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of teams missed on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was, the last pick in the second round, or 64 overall. But, you know, I think that for good reason, a lot of teams had concerns about, A, the durability. Remember, his career, college career, ended with a bad neck injury at Ole Miss, and he had some other injury issues there. But he also just was not a polished route runner, and it's just a testament to how far he's come. You know, when he first got here in 2019, I think for the first, you know, few games, maybe the first half of his rookie season, they were basically sticking him on one side of the field and not asking him to do a lot in terms of, you know, just running a small portion of the route tree. And so he has really developed in that part of his game. And, you know, when you combine that, obviously, with the physical tools that he has, the you know, 4.3 speed and the 6.4, 220 or whatever. I don't even know how big he is, but he's massive and he can run. And you're really starting to see the polish in his game that has really come a long way.
No doubt. And we're talking to Brady Henderson, NFL Nation, ESPN, Seahawks reporter. Brady, with the offense itself, right? Traditionally, this Seahawks offense, it was, hey, man, they're going to come out and they're going to ground and pound. And you'll see an occasional pass from Russell Wilson, but he's just going to manage the game. Under Shane Waldron, it seems like, you know, there's a little bit of a shift where they're giving him a chance to really show that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. How have you seen that marriage just come together between Waldron and Russell Wilson? Because it looks good.
Yeah, so far so good. And, you know, they did open up their offense last season under Brian Schottenheimer. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, everybody has, let Russ cook.
They
very much were doing that early last season. And then, you know, they kind of hit a rough spot. Wilson started turning the ball over a little bit. They ran into some tough defenses, and Carroll really kind of reined things back in. But, you know, this is a new offense that they have under Waldron. And it's not just new in the sense that they have a new coordinator. It's new in the sense that they really gave Waldron a lot of freedom to really bring in a lot of his ideas, much more so than they did when they hired Brian Schottenheimer in 2018, and really made him keep most of what they were already doing. So I think this offense, they would probably tell you in an honest moment that they needed to freshen things up, just because they had done so much of the same stuff for so many years that it kind of made them predictable. You know, there was so much of that on film that I think teams kind of started to pick up on that. And so this new offense, it there is some of what they were doing. There is some carryover, but it's a lot of some of the Rams staples, you know, like the heavy use of three-step motion, getting wide receivers involved in the running game with end arounds. There's going to be more tempo, which obviously was something that the Rams have done pretty well over the years. And there's more of an emphasis on short and intermediate throws.
Yeah.
That are designed to get the ball out of Wilson's hands quickly. And that's important for a couple reasons, obviously because of, we know, as we heard him say in February, he's frustrated with all the hits and sacks he's taken. But it also, that was something that their offense was really missing late last season. Defenses, you know, they were killing defenses with the deep game. Defenses started to catch on and take that away. And in the second half of that season, when the Seahawks offense really hit a wall, they just didn't have the short and intermediate game to really counter and to take what defenses were giving them.
Yeah, great points there, Brady. And you wrote about the defense, the pass rush, you know, Daryl Taylor especially. What have you seen from this pass rush and just this first game? I mean, like you said, he ran over Braden Smith. You got Puna Ford doing his thing. What's showing there?
It's just a really deep group. And, you know, it's possible for them that they won't have – it's possible that they could lead the league in sacks or be right up there, and they might not have one guy get more than 10 sacks just because they've got a lot of guys who can get it done. And, you know, Daryl Taylor is one of those guys. He was their second-round pick in 2020. They thought he was the second-best pass rusher in that draft behind Chase Young, and so they took him in the second round, traded up for him, and he ends up missing his rookie season with a leg injury from college that really did not heal the way that they had anticipated. And so he's back, and he looked really good in the summer and in the preseason, and he really showed in that game, especially on that one play where he ran through Braden Smith. He showed everybody what the Seahawks have been waiting for. And, they, you know, they've got other guys. Carlos Dunlap is probably – he's definitely the most accomplished guy there. But, you know, they've just got so many guys that, you know, they can afford to – assuming everybody stays healthy – you know, they can afford to really not lean too heavily on Carlos Dunlap, which I think makes sense because, you know, he's 32 years old, I believe, in his 12th NFL season. And so They've got a lot of guys, so many, in fact, that their 2019 first-round pick, L.J. Collier, was actually a healthy scratch on Sunday. So that shows how healthy they were otherwise, and it shows how deep that pass rush is.
Yeah, I saw that in the post that you had, and I was shocked that he wasn't activated. But, hey, man, the best players play, and in this case, I guess that was the situation. Moving to the second level of the defense, Jordan Brooks. He was a guy that, you know, I really liked. Coming into the draft last year, you got Bobby Wagner. What has it been like just, you know, seeing Brooks come in and just get acclimated? I would imagine he kind of took KJ Wright's spot. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how you look at it, basically him and Daryl Taylor both kind of took KJ Wright's spot. So Taylor is sort of playing strong side linebacker, which in this kind of new iteration of their defense is really more like a defensive end. And, you know, a big part of the reason why they did not want to bring KJ Wright back, even after he, frankly, had one of his best statistical seasons last season, is, you know, they wanted to get their top two picks from last year's draft on the field more. And, you know, Brooks really, he ended up starting last season for most of the year after Bruce Irvin went down and they kind of reshuffled their linebacker core, moved KJ Wright over to the strong side, and that opened the door for Jordan Brooks. But even when he was starting, he was coming off the field in passing situations because the Seahawks coaching staff really valued KJ Wright's experience more so than Jordan Brooks' speed. So they kept KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner on the field as their two linebackers in passing situations. So, you know, this is really an opportunity for Jordan Brooks to break out because he doesn't have, you know, KJ Wright, a veteran like that, keeping him off the field. And so his speed, I think, is really going to jump out to people. He's an instinctive guy. And he's a load too. And, you know, one of the reasons, I think that pick when they drafted him, I think it was 27th overall last year, it surprised a lot of people because Patrick Queen from LSU was still on the board. And, you know, a lot of the draft picks had Patrick Queen, rated above Jordan Brooks. And one of the reasons why the Seahawks, it was close, but one of the reasons why they liked Brooks over Queen was because, they felt like those guys were, you know, he was just as fast as Queen, but he was also quite a bit heavier and sturdier.
Yeah. Last thing, I guess we could hit on Jamal Adams. It'd be crazy not to mention him. You've seen it, right? His versatility. I mean, is that pretty much what they want him to do? Like, just, you know, be kind of like that Queen on the chessboard.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of describing it. In fact, when they traded, you know, the two first-round picks for him last year, that's one way I heard him described as kind of a chess piece that you can move all around. And, you know, he did maybe more blitzing last season than he might this year. That's just kind of my guess for a couple reasons. One is that he kind of joined the team late in the game. It was right before training camp. So, you know, he kind of had to learn a new defense on the fly, and I think he's going to be in better position. He's talked about how he has a better understanding of their defense. So I wonder if there's maybe more coverage stuff that they could do with him this year. And also, with as deep as their pass rush is, I don't think they're going to have to blitz him as much as they did last year. I mean, it was a lot out of necessity last year. I think now, with the state of their pass rush, that could be more of a luxury for them just because they've got so many other guys. I mean, you saw him, they blitzed him on the first series against Indianapolis, and he actually dropped Carson Wentz, but it got called back because officials ruled him in the neutral zone. So that's still going to be a part of what he does, but maybe not quite as often as it was last year.
Yeah, and Quandre Diggs is a darn good safety as well. So, yeah, this team is pretty well stacked. Maybe not the Legion of Boom, but they still are a pretty solid defense.
They are, yeah. And you know, having two – you know, Pro Bowl safeties and a really good defensive line, especially on the edge, and some pretty, you know, some good options at nickelback. You know, the one position that we have not mentioned is cornerback, outside cornerback, and that's really the biggest question mark on their roster. And they've got, you know, okay depth there. They've got enough experience. They just don't have that all-pro, you know, even Pro Bowl caliber guy that you feel like, okay, that's a guy that's – they're going to win games because of that guy. You know, I think – Trey Flowers and DJ Reed, they're definitely starting caliber cornerbacks, but I think on a really good defense, they're probably number twos and maybe even good number threes, and so that's why it's important for them to have all the pieces that they have around those guys, because having a really good safety duo and having a really deep pass rush, I think that can take some of the pressure off those guys on the outside.
Absolutely. The front end will have to help the back end in this case. So I guess, you know, the key for the Titans is going to be to stay ahead of the downs, because ahead of the chains, because, man, those 12s, I know it gets loud there. But, yeah, Brady, I appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely have to, you know, link up for some Starbucks in the press box. Man, that's always a plus in coming out there, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right, my man. Hey, there's a Jimi Hendrix statue about a mile away from Lumen Field. So if you want to go check that out, I'll tell you exactly where it is, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely have to get that from you.
All right, my man. Hey, have a safe trip out here, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks. See you Sunday. So that's the show. Definitely shout out to Elijah Campbell making this thing happen. Appreciate Chris Sanders, Forever Titans receiver, coming on. You heard Brady Henderson giving you the lowdown on the Seattle Seahawks. It's going to be a great game, man. Every week's a great game. Every week's a great opportunity to watch this awesome game that we all love called football. I am your host, Teron Davenport, signing off. Thank you for tuning in. God bless and good night.